Coming up on episode 196 of Wheel Bearings, Roberto drives a couple of polar opposite vehicles, the 2021 McLaren GT and the new Toyota Mirai. Nicole tries out the Kia Sorento, and I drive the 2021 Dodge Durango SRT Hellcat. We do a deep dive on the Ford F-150 Lightning that's coming about a year from now. We talk about legalizing Level 3 conditionally automated driving systems in the UK. Caterham is working on an electric version of the 7, and we answer some listener questions. Finally, if you enjoy this show, please make sure to join our Patreon and leave us reviews wherever you can. Thanks.
With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 196 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abu Al-Samaj from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin with Let's Go Autobytel this week.
All right.
And I am Roberto Baldwin, and I'm going to say Engadget this week because I'm shooting video with them this week.
Ooh.
Excellent.
Fancy.
Looking forward to hearing about that. All right. Nicole, what have you been driving?
I had a very brief stint in the 2021 Kia Sorento X-Line. So it looked kind of fancy. I like this. I had 3 days in it. It was a very short loan, and now I have a different car. Like, I just got used to it, and they took it away. But, you know, I'm already a fan of Kias. One of the things that I like about Kia is that you get a car that looks always on the outside and on the inside like more than what you paid for it. They do a really fantastic job of, I don't know how they do it. Like, the materials, the design, everything about them makes them feel like more than they are. Like, if you took the little Kia badge off, you'd be like, oh, I don't know who made this. It must be somebody fancy. Ha ha, it's Kia. Like, you just don't realize it. And I think they did that with this one. I mean, the one that I was driving, the X-Line, it was $43,965. And it felt like it was more than a $43,000 car. It felt easy, like you're driving in something that was like 10 grand more, because the interior is beautiful. It just looks so good. So that's like my favorite thing about Kias in general. Like, how do they do that? What magic do they use that they can pack the look and the quality of the materials into their cars for the prices that they do? So, I mean, it's
big SUV. So this is the new Sorento, right? Not the old one that Robbie was driving in Hawaii, right?
This is, I know, I was thinking of you, Robbie. I'm like, this is the new one. I have the current one. You have the whatever one. Yes, this is the new Sorento. So it was a good drive. I was thinking about, you were saying about how it worked out for you guys in Hawaii. And I think it was a great choice. I mean, it has the features you want. It has a good set of standard safety. It's got like a 10.25-inch infotainment screen. And it has second row captain's chairs. I love the captain's chairs. I know you lose a seat when you don't have the bench seats, but the captain's chairs just, like, I don't know. I guess if you have a family and you always need three kids to sit in the back seat, it's one thing. But the rest of the time, I like the little division. And I like that grownups feel like they have grownup seats when they sit in the middle. You know?
Yeah, it's comfortable. You feel very important when you're in a captain's chair versus a bench. And to your point about Kia feeling like a much more expensive vehicle, I think it's still a little hard to get the general public behind Kia. I literally today, my cousin, one of my 50,000 cousins, sent me a message asking, she needs a third row SUV. And she was asking about the Q7. I was like, well, there's Q7, there's Atlas. Well, but you should definitely drive the Telluride.
And what did she say?
And she's like, oh, really? I'm like, no, I'm telling you, you should really go drive the Telluride. You're going to get there. You're going to look at it. You're going to realize, wait, that's a Kia. You're going to get inside. And you're going to drive it. And you're probably going to fall in love with it. But I think it's really, there's still that barrier, that, you know, that barrier. They're like, well, I don't know.
It's so hard. And you're right, because anytime like someone will say, oh, I'm looking for, and it almost doesn't even matter. I'm looking for a crossover. I'm looking for an SUV, three rows. And I throw Kia out there because they're a good, affordable choice. They hold up. You don't have to worry about being broken down on the side of the road. Like they're good.
Unless you don't change the oil.
Well, but you know, that'll happen in any car, believe it or not, Sam. But so they're a great car, but they have this sort of stigma from earlier Kia that they cannot shake. Like people who remember Kia as being something that looked cheap, they felt cheap, they were the compromise car once upon a time. Like, yeah. Well, I got to buy something. Kia's affordable. I'll buy a Kia. They haven't shaken that with the general public, and they really should, because they are not that car anymore. They are so much better. My mom had an old 2007, I think, Kia Rio. Oh, Lord almighty. That thing was not good. It was not good. So when people say, oh, Kia, I'm like, no, I get it. My mom has one of those. That's not what they're building today.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the last, I don't know, 2-3 years at least, you know, Kia has consistently been at the top of the JD Power initial quality survey. You know, the owner, people that actually bought Kias, you know, will tell you these are great cars. They don't have problems with them. They work really well. And they look good too. And, you know, their design language has been evolving, you know, over the last year or so as well, you know, with the new Sorento, and the K5 and what we're going to see coming up soon with the EV600 or the EV6, mm-hmm. You know, they've really been maturing their design language, you know, and I mean, I've always, you know, for the last decade, I thought they've been great looking vehicles. I thought they had a really cool, unique look to them. And I like what they've done with the new Sorento. I had a chance to drive do the first drive of the hybrid version of the Sorento back in November, I think.
Oh, how was that?
It's excellent. Yeah. You know, basically the same hybrid setup that was in the Sonata that you were driving last week, mm-hmm. with, you know, conventional 6-speed automatic transmission, and the electric motor in there. But instead of the 2.5 liter or the 2 liter, I can't remember, the 2 liter that's in the Sonata, they use a 1.6 turbo. So it's got a little more overall power than in the sedans, and it was fantastic. I mean, you could not really tell that it was a hybrid from the mm-hmm. way it drove, you know, except for when the engine shut off and it went into electric mode. But, you know, the vehicle itself was great. I really, really enjoyed driving it. And the new interior is quite a nice upgrade from what they had before, which wasn't bad to begin with. But I really like some of the details, like, and the door panels, by the door handles, the kind of diamond pattern that they put in the metallic finish, by the door handles. You know, it's just a really nice little detail. And also across the top of the dashboard on the passenger side, they have it there as well.
Yeah, they do. That's it. There's so many little details. And I think that's what makes it look so different. Like those little details, those little accents are what take an interior from being, okay, it looks good, it's nice, it's fine, whatever, to being, oh, wow, somebody spent some time to actually make this mm-hmm. look good and make this feel good. And they do it in all of their vehicles. And you see a very definite improvement as you move up the trim ladder. Like sometimes you don't see much change depending on the car. You know, it's like, oh, so they went from, you know, cloth seats to leather finally on the top trim. But how else do you know that this one is better? You see it in Kia when you get up to things where they have packages and trims that they've got. Like this one has a Bose surround sound system. It has heated steering wheel. It has aluminum sport pedals. It has, you know, all these little details, the leather seats that look like expensive leather. They're really good looking stuff. You don't find that with every OEM in a car at this price point. Like I said, this was $43,965. It's not like it's a, you know, $18,000 compact sedan. This is a significant vehicle. It's a good size. You're getting a lot of car for that price. And it drives beautifully. It's nice and quiet. It handles well. It can more than easily get out of its own way as you're trying to get on the highway. So there's no sense of that guy coming up behind you and wondering if he's going to be in your back seat if he can't get moving fast enough, you know. So it's nice to drive. It handles well. And it's just a stellar experience to sit in that vehicle.
Was that the 2.5 turbo in there?
2.5 turbo, yes.
So that's like 281 horsepower.
I think it's 281, yeah, and 311 pound-feet of torque. So it's when it goes, you know, it's not, you in terms of how it drives, it feels like it's, feels lighter than you would think. For, you know, when you look at it, you think, okay, this is going to drive like kind of a heavy vehicle. It doesn't. It drives like something much, it's more sportier than you would expect for its size.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And what kind of fuel economy did you get out of it?
I didn't check. I only had it for 3 days on the money. So I didn't get, you know, driving in enough to say, yeah, the fuel economy is, you know, good or bad. But I know I didn't have to put gas in it. So, you know, pipeline, take that. I didn't need gas this week.
Excellent. What about you, Robbie? What did you have?
So I had two vehicles this week, and I guess I should just start off with the big number, the big one. I had the McLaren GT. $214,000 of luxury McLaren. I think that's, you know, luxury plush McLaren.
Is there a non-luxury McLaren? Let's just clarify. Is there a non-luxury version?
Well, the McLarens are typically they're essentially just sports cars. Yeah, they're supercars, but they're really sports cars. You get in and you're you know, if you're not a fan of having your teeth rattled when you hit a bump, then yeah, McLarens are really made for the track. And the GT is their, you know, it's their Grand Tour, their Gran Turismo vehicle. And it feels like they really didn't have to, there's not really any compromise, I think, when you get into the GT versus, say, you know, what you would expect from a McLaren when it comes to performance wise. I mean, 0 to 60 in 3.1 seconds. I mean, well, there you go. That's all you got to say. Done. It was
kind of sluggish compared to a Tesla, though.
Yeah, but if I couldn't take a Tesla at the corners I was doing either. I just plop.
You know, I have never once ever even sat in the McLaren. I've never driven one. I know nothing other than what you are telling me.
Well,
today.
Now that you're a NACTOY juror, we're going to have to address that.
I would like to think it someday I would just end up in one. That would be very nice. I mean, I would love they do to
have
one.
They do have a new car coming out this year, the Artura.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that should be eligible for North American Car of the Year. So
let's see if it's eligible to end up in my driveway. Those are two different things.
Well, I mean, generally manufacturers try to get, you know, anything that's on the list, they try to get it to all the jurors. So I'm sure they will get you one.
It'll be a surprise for you, though, won't it? It'll just like one day it'll be there.
It will be a surprise. They're always a surprise. It's like, oh, what's today's car? It's rare. It's once every 6 weeks or so. I knew it was coming today because I knew the Kia was a short loan. But yeah, normally surprise. So that will be a surprise. I'll be very excited with if that happens.
So Robbie, you know, how grand was the touring experience in the McLaren GT?
It was very grand. It was very comfortable. You know, I gave a couple people, including my wife, rides in it, and they all commented on how smooth it drove. And you know, these are people from, you know, my wife, who's only driven like just regular cars, and she's been in a few supercars with me, but she doesn't seem to care. But she's like, oh, this is kind of nice. To a friend of mine whose father owns like 4 GTs, and he knows what, you know, a supercar feels like, you know, that. And he's like, this is actually really nice. We're driving around San Francisco, which isn't, you know, it's potholes and, you know, there's road issues. And it was, yeah, it drove very well in comfort mode. Even in sport mode, it felt, you know, very, you know, I'd say respectable. You know, you get the nice leather seats. You can get cashmere if you want, apparently. They didn't get
really? Cashmere.
That's cashmere and microfiber. And I don't know where it goes.
Wait, like where would you put cashmere on?
I don't know.
On the headliner, I think.
On the headliner, on something. I don't know.
So you could just like reach up and be like, ooh, cashmere.
It's cashmere.
Which I'm not complaining about. I'm like, that could be kind of cool.
They line the glove box in cashmere. So when you reach
so
in,
you to, reach in,
you reach in to grab your registration for the police officer, you know, it.
Given how often you'll be doing that, you'll be doing that like once a week when you drive a McLaren. So it needs to be a nice, comfortable spot for you to continually reach into.
Yeah.
Any car that I have that is any type of sporty, when I'm driving around the highway near my house, a Charger or a Challenger will pull up next to me and try to race me every single time. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to race you in a McLaren. Because you're just driving a black Charger and those are a dime a dozen around here. I'm in a bright white McLaren. Who's getting pulled over in this?
Who's going to get a ticket?
Well, and also, how many of those plain black Chargers are, you know, unmarked police cars?
Exactly. They're like, hey, look at this.
That was one of my favorite things about driving a Charger, is that you drive up and people get out of your way because they all assume you're a police car until you're not. You're like, I'm not. Just move, though.
Yeah, no, it was I was very pleased at how comfortable the vehicle was. I mean, it's still, you know, you're still going to feel it. It's not a BMW. It's not a Mercedes. It's not even, you know, it's not Aston Martin. You still feel something. But I preferred it over the Aston Martin, the Vantage.
So is it something you could actually like daily driver it?
You could. This is the daily driver McLaren. So if you're super rich,
yes,
and you have, let's say, a G-Wagon, and you need something just to tout around town, sometimes you want to go a little bit quicker, you can get a McLaren for $214,000. And I will tell you, every supercar, every sports car I get, is the most terrifying experience, because there's always the concern about that front spoiler. That front spoiler is bane of my existence.
Mm-hmm.
Going over those steep driveway ramps and speed
going
bumps.
Over. Exactly.
It's always the little cement things that they put at the edge of a parking spot so that you know. And you're like, I end up as like I'm 5 feet away from it. My husband's like, you can pull in a little. I'm like, oh, I guess I can.
No, it's close enough. That's okay.
I don't know.
I don't want to risk it.
Closer.
Yeah. You're 24 inches from the curb. I'm like, you know, that's good.
That's close enough. That's too close. Who knows? It could shift a little bit while we're inside eating dinner. I wouldn't want it to fall and hit the car. Yeah.
Well, I think you know, the GT, if I'm not mistaken, like you can open up the rear glass cover, and you can put long objects in there, you know, across the top of the engine bay, right? So like,
yeah,
I think I saw somebody put a surfboard in one.
Well, that had to be a really tiny, it's not or that deep.
Okay.
It's, you know, they're selling like very, very, very expensive McLaren, maybe, like golf clubs, but you can put like skis in there or a snowboard in there. You could probably put one, maybe two carry-ons in there. Really, it's like 15 cubic feet or so of space. What is it? It's the 14.8 cubic feet of storage in that bay. But it's very like
shallow.
Thin and shallow and long. But you can get stuff in there. The sort of the money, even though it's less cubic, it's only 5.3 cubic feet. The frunk, I guess you would call the stowage area in the front of the vehicle, that's like a nice square. You can just shove, you know,
drop,
and that's
a
where I
carry on bag in there.
Yeah, I stuck my
grocery bags.
You can put your grocery bag, your carry on bag, everything you want in there. Anything you don't want to get warm while you're driving around, because that stowage area behind you with that giant hatchback, it's right above the engine. So
it gets toasty.
I wouldn't recommend putting ice cream there or computers or anything you don't want to get warm. If you get some food to go, maybe that's a good place to put it.
That's how you get, like, you don't need one of those little fancy little warming bags they have like at Domino's. You're like, no, wait, I'm just gonna put this on top of my engine. We're good.
I'm just gonna put this in the back seat behind the front seat of my McLaren.
It's gonna be fine. Like,
it's gonna be great.
Would you make those fast food runs all the time in your McLaren like you do?
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I had a bunch of stuff. I had my backpack. I had my camera gear. I had I wanted to say sticks. What's the tripod? I had, you know, I had a bunch of, I just kept throwing stuff in there and I'm like, oh, this is fine. I really didn't put anything in that long, because I'm always terrified. They have like little cross mount, like they have like nets you can put in there and all this stuff that comes with it. But it's always the, like, what if I stop and then all this stuff just comes and smacks me in the back of the head?
That would be uncomfortable.
Exactly. And it'd be warm at the same time. So no one wants that.
And you don't want pizza all over the back of your head. So
yeah, you don't want pizza all over the back of your head.
That would be a mess.
But no, it was, I was pleasantly surprised. You know, it's what is it? It's 4 point. What is the clearance? 4.3 inches, and then the front end. You can lift it up to 5.1. So pulling into my driveway was fine, even without lifting up the front end. I was able to go over speed bumps, which I had this super fast about 18, 24 months ago, and that thing was terrifying because it didn't have any sort of lift, and everything felt like Mount Everest. I'm glad that they only gave me that car for like 2 or 3 days.
You were cool with that.
I was very happy about that. And we had to park it at someone's house who didn't have any sort of lip to get into the garage, but they did have a little bump, and we had to drive over that so damn slow. So yeah, the GT, it's one of the least expensive, and not the least expensive McLaren. I feel like it's going to be a big hit with the LA crowd, the people who want, you know, the doors to go up like this, and the, you know, the cachet of owning McLaren, but also who don't want to have it scrape up all the time and don't need their kidneys, you know, battered about every time they hit a speed bump.
See, I feel like you can't even drive something like a McLaren here. Forget trying to get in and out of a driveway just because our roads are such a mess this far northeast. It's like a typical road. You're like, oh, I just bottomed out the car. Whoops, you know.
Yeah, I drove it over to Treasure Island, which has that sort of same issue. That, you know, and take a few more pictures. And by the time I got over there, it was like my third day with the car, and I was like, yeah, it was fine. Blah 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 blah. Driving over speed, you know, I was like, you know, the first day you're terrified. And
then yeah.
The more you drive, the more comfortable you get, and you're like, well, there's actually room to do stuff with. I think there's going to be there are people, potentially other auto journalists who might poo-poo it, you know, because it's not a true McLaren for whatever reason.
It's the McLaren for posers.
Yeah, it's like the McLaren for, it's like people who are still angry about the Cayenne, like the Porsche. You know, sales of the Porsche Cayenne allow Porsche to make a 911 variant for every single person who wants to buy a 911. Yeah, and if you want a 911 variant, just call them. They'll make it for you. They don't.
Tell us what you want. We'll build it.
That's exactly the thing with Porsche. You know, they will literally build you anything you want as long as you give them your checkbook. You know, yep. Give them just sign the check. We'll fill in the numbers later.
When we figure it out, we'll let you know what you paid.
you want to match what color on your drapes? Not a problem. We can do that.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. There was a Rolls Royce. Somebody was telling me a story about Rolls Royce where a guy wanted the wood inlay inside his Rolls Royce came from a tree on his family's property. Like it was one of the trees on the estate and it had fallen down or something. I would like to use this wood inside my Rolls Royce. I'm like, really? You have an estate and you use one of the tree? Okay.
Well, you see, that's the difference between a rich person and like a regular person is that a regular person like, yeah, I got a farm and a tree fell over. But no, this person had an estate.
Right. Yes, exactly. Well, on the estate.
I got a bunch of land up north. Nope. No, you have an estate.
You have an estate. Yes.
So, yeah. The Rolls Royce. And then I also, I'm currently driving the Mirai. I've driven it before. It's a nice Toyota. It's probably one of the best looking sedans, if not the best looking sedan, in my opinion. But it's also hydrogen, which means I can only drive it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know
there's a decent number of hydrogen stations around the Bay Area. You know, it's not that bad. You know, I drove the original Mirai around there and the Honda Clarity and what else?
Nexo?
I think that's it. No, I didn't, I drove the Nexo down in Southern California, but I drove the Clarity and the Mirai, both, you know, around the Bay Area, and you know, it wasn't that much of a problem to find hydrogen stations. It was expensive, but it wasn't, you know,
we actually apparently have hydrogen stations, at least in Mass, like in the Boston area, but you can't really use them for your car because there's also, last time I checked with Toyota, and it could have changed in the last year, but probably not. There's a law on the books that you can't have gas canisters in tunnels or on bridges within the city limits, and that is a gas canister. So therefore, you cannot take the Mirai any place where you would go through a tunnel or over a bridge. So they have the facilities to fuel them up, but they can't legally drive them. So not working so much at the moment.
So presumably you could not, you also could not drive a natural gas vehicle or a propane powered vehicle.
The canisters of gas. You couldn't take a gas canister. And even though it's, so I'd assume anything that would be a gas canister would technically violate that particular law, and they were trying to, you know, do what they could to say, hey, can we make some adjustment to account for vehicles that run this way? But because there was no real public demand, there was no real like incentive on the part of the people who make those rules.
For the people that want a fuel cell vehicle.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't enough for them to be, let's go to bat for those three people. Nope. So it hadn't happened yet. It was a little while ago talking to him about it. I can't imagine it's changed. Could have. Maybe the law changed during the middle of the COVID pandemic, but I doubt it.
So Robbie, did you ever get a chance to drive the original Mirai?
Yeah. I drove the original Mirai. That was an ugly car. The new
just
one
putting
is,
it mildly.
Is yeah the new one is much better. Even driving a new one's much better. The old one, you know, it's like driving a Camry. It wasn't anything exciting. It was, you know, I drove it around San Francisco for I think a day. This new second generation, it's rear wheel drive, and it's funny because when they announced it, like, oh, it's rear wheel drive, did you do that for performance? They're like, no, that's just where it worked best. Based on how we laid everything out in the hydrogen system. So all of us, everyone in the room's like, oh, rear wheel drive, awesome.
Well, so you don't get excited.
And then the engineer's like, nah, that's just where it fit.
It's the only place we had space left for a motor. Yeah.
And, you know, they shrunk down a lot of the elements of their hydrogen powertrain between the first and the second generation. You know, you get in the car, it's super comfortable. It, you know, drives really well. It's kind of plush. It, you know, you have it. It feels closer to a Lexus than a Toyota. It's sort of like what Honda was trying to do with the Clarity line. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to like up, you know, push up the interior. But you know, it's you know, handles pretty well. It has like a little bit of a, you know, that Cadillac, you know, what do you call it? The floatiness. It floats a little bit. You know,
no one could see you with your hands. He's like making this floating motion. And
yeah, like, I'm sorry.
What is he trying to show us?
So, you know, everyone, we're going to have, you just have to put gifs in there of just me doing things. You know, it's definitely, you know, it has it's an EV powertrain, but it's still not, I mean, it's 0-60 in 9.1 seconds, even in sport mode. You know, so it's, you're not.
So it's a little bit slower than the McLaren, just a little.
Just a tad bit.
A tiny bit.
It's just, what is it? 6 seconds. But what's 6 seconds between friends?
But you can take a few more of your friends with you in it, though. You can only take one friend in the McLaren. You can take three.
That's true.
And they're all going to be real comfortable in the Mirai. It's, you know, overall, it's a good sedan. It's a good car. It's sort of trapped by the infrastructure and Toyota, they partner with people, but they don't put any money into it. And it's, you know, I don't think Toyota's ever going to give up on hydrogen. And I think hydrogen is great for long haul trucking. I think that's where it's going to find its place in the world. But for passenger vehicles, I mean, we've been talking the last, you know, I feel like I've been talking to Toyota about hydrogen for the past 7-8 years. And every year, like, oh, we're getting a way more, you know, it's this is expanding in California, and this is expanding in California, and this is expanding in California, and this, and every year you get like one or two stations, additional state. I know Shell now has stations with hydrogen here in Northern California, but for the most part, it's the infrastructure sort of build out is just too slow. There's not, you know, it's demand versus like how much do we need? They don't have the government behind them like South Korea.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue. I mean, the very first media trip I ever took when I started writing for Autoblog back in fall of 2006 was with Honda to California for a drive of the FCX. It was still the concept then. You know, this is before the first Clarity. They brought us out and we drove it at Laguna Seca, and you know, Honda, you know, Honda is the other company, you know, besides Hyundai and Toyota that, you know, is still really into fuel cells. And, you know, they were pushing it hard then and still hasn't really gone anywhere. So far, right now, there's 51 hydrogen stations in North America between the U.S.
in
and
the
Canada.
51 in all of North America.
Yes.
You think about how the EV charging infrastructure and how much more robust that is, but still how unwilling people are to accept that they have a place to charge their EV. And we have 51 hydrogen fueling stations.
51.
We got a ways to go before anybody is convinced on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've asked Toyota point blank about it. And I'm like, well, why would I buy this car that I couldn't drive, let's say, if I wanted to go to Ohio, but I can buy an EV and I can charge that. Anyway, I mean, I might not have a charging station, but I could charge it at home. I can refuel this car at my house versus a hydrogen, which is if you just can't get to it, that's it. You're done.
Right. Right.
So it's a weird push. I think Toyota will continue to do it. You know, they've been doing it with down in Long Beach with their sort of long haul or not long haul, short haul trucks down there. So they've been working on it for the trucking, you know, side and the shipping side. So it makes way more sense for that. It makes a little bit less sense for passenger vehicles, but I see Mirais on the road, like actual people are buying.
Yeah. There's actually a surprising number of Mirais and Clarities, around the Bay Area.
Yeah. I think it's a good lease. You get free fueling and you get 14 or 21 days of a free, like car rental. So if you want to go on a trip, you know,
if you want to drive to Vegas or something.
Yeah. You can drop your Mirais off, I guess at the Toyota dealership and they'll give you a Camry or
so. That just gives so for 14. So you could just take a rental and go wherever the heck you wanted to go. Like I wonder. Wow, that's kind of.
If you want to drive to LA, I mean, I think you could drive. I think there's a hydrogen station along the 5 between LA and San Francisco.
Yeah, near Fresno.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. I don't know. I that's one of the ones where I'm like, I don't know. That's someone would have to pay me for that. That'd have to be a story as opposed to just me going for it. But, you know, if you want to drive to LA, you could, you know, I guess turn in your Mirai and they'll give you something else. I don't know if they'll give you something, anything you want, or there's probably like some, you know, a few choices.
Probably like pages and pages of ifs, ands, or buts, but.
Yeah.
Probably just give you like an Avalon or, you know, a RAV4 or something.
Yeah.
That's fine. Huh. So yeah, Mirai and McLaren, the M's of the world.
And I had something completely different. The 2021 Dodge Durango SRT Hellcat. So at one point last week, when we were doing the transition, when they were dropping it off, I had 1410 horsepower in my driveway, because, you know, with the TRX parked next to the Durango, you know, I had two Hellcats in the driveway. You know, the Hellcat, you know, is, as we discussed last week, you know, it's an absurd engine in 2021, but it's a great engine. I love it. You know, the noise it makes is wonderful. But strangely enough, in the Durango, you know, the Durango is a three row SUV based on the same platform as the current Grand Cherokee. And, you know, it's essentially a longer version of the Grand Cherokee. And unlike in the TRX, you know, the Durango is not lifted up or anything. It's, you know, it sits, you know, at a normal height. And It was odd because it's actually seemed louder in the Durango than it did in the pickup. You know, the engine was making a lot more noise, and just driving around town, there seemed to be more of a drone from the engine. And after driving it for a few days, I could definitely see where it would start to get a little tiresome after a while. You know, there was just a little too much of it. It wasn't there just when you're accelerating hard. I mean, it was there all the time.
Do you think it would get tiresome, or do you think you were going in that like, okay, you had it, it was fun and cool, and then it started to get tiresome, but then if you kept it for another week, would it have gone the other way and now it's just become a background noise you're not even aware of anymore?
It's possible. It's hard to tell. You know, I'd have to get one, you know, for an extended, you know.
Yeah, I think what you need is a 1 month loan of the Durango.
You know, 3 or 4 years, you know.
Yeah, that ought to explain it for you. Yeah.
That way I could be absolutely sure that it wasn't something that was going to go away, you know, or you know, that I wouldn't be able to tolerate for an extended period of time. Unfortunately, the Durango Hellcat is going to be a one and done product, one model year only. They're building 2,000 of them for the 2021 model year, and that's it. Once those 2,000 are built, there will not be any more, because updated emissions regulations, they are not able to make the Durango Hellcat meet the new evaporative emission standards.
Stupid emission standards ruining all the fun.
I know.
Grumble.
But, this thing is just stupid fast. I went out to a remote location where there was nobody around that I could disturb. Hit the switch on the center console for launch control. And one of the nice things about this, both the TRX and the Durango, the launch control is really easy to use. It's just one switch on the center console below the infotainment system. Hit that. It's enabled. Put your foot on the brake. Put your left foot on the brake, your right foot on the gas pedal all the way to the floor. When the message on the cluster says you can take your foot off the brake now, you do that, and it just shoots. And 3.4 seconds, 0-60. It was fun. It was very good. This thing is expensive. The base price on the Durango Hellcat starts at $81,000. $82,490 when you factor in the delivery charge. And the one that I had, which had a few options on there, had the rear seat DVD entertainment system for $2,000, the trailer tow package, the premium interior group with the suede headliner and assorted other stuff, and the 19-speaker Harman Kardon audio system, came to a grand total of $90,350, which is a very expensive Durango. But it's actually about the same price as the Grand Cherokee Trackhawk that I drove a couple of years ago. When I had the Grand Cherokee, I had that one in like February, and it was hard to find a dry road when I had it, but it was still remarkably capable on cold, wet pavement. On that, with that one, I did 0-60 in 3.6 seconds. And
so if you had to pick, you can have the Durango or you can have the Jeep. You can only have one. There can be only one. It's like the Highlander, not the Toyota, the guy with the sword.
I would probably take the Jeep.
The Jeep.
Because I don't really need a three row. So it's a little bit shorter, a little bit lighter. Not a lot lighter. I mean, these things are all pretty hefty. With anything with a Hellcat in it, it's going to be pretty hefty.
Right.
I think I like, and I kind of like the look of the Jeep a little better. I don't mind the Durango either. I think I like the Durango, as a three row SUV, if that's what you need. I think it's a really good looking three row SUV. And for 2021, Dodge has they've redone the interior. So it's gotten, another mid-cycle refresh. So it's got an all new dashboard, looks even a little more premium than before. It's a good looking setup, and it has the new Uconnect 5 infotainment system in there, which is based on Android Automotive. It's got built-in Amazon Alexa voice services. So, if you're an Echo user, you can use the infotainment system just as you would your Echo at home. Does all the same commands. It's roomy and comfortable for in this case six people, because it had captain's chairs in the second row. The front seats, since it's got a Hellcat in there, they've put the sport seats in there, which are quite comfortable. They're a little wider than most sport seats, which I think, is appropriate given kind of who the likely customer is for this vehicle. It's not like the narrower sport seats that you would typically find in a sports car, but they definitely keep you in place. It's good. It's a good vehicle. If you're looking for a stupid fast, three row SUV.
And who isn't?
Of course. I mean, when you don't need to haul, when you don't need to, go racing across the desert, and you want to just drive around town, it's a good choice.
It'll work.
Yeah.
It's really tough for me in my brain, even though I just said, you know, the McLaren's only $214,000, but it's really hard for me to wrap my head around
$90,000 Dodge.
I have a $90,000 Dodge Durango.
Yeah.
Because a Dodge Durango at one point about 10 years ago was the punchline.
Yes.
And like something I was doing with somebody else who in automotive. And yeah, the 1 year I can understand, you know, it's only 1 year emission, because there's not an emission law that FCA doesn't hate. Right, and I don't know how Stellantis feels now with their, you know, but I can tell you that there's never been an emission law that hasn't irked the fine folks at FCA.
Well, they're scrambling to stuff the Hellcat into anything they can while they still can before they have to start going electric.
I'll be so sad when the Hellcat isn't, like, when it just has to go away. I mean, it's also like, that's a pretty darn cool name. Like, they could have you know, whoever came up with that, I'm like, good job. Give that guy a raise, because that's a fantastic name for
instead
it.
Instead of some stupid alphanumeric designation.
Right. It's not like the 594C2. It's like Hellcat. Okay, yeah, exactly. I'll take that, Hellcat. You know.
Turns out the guy's name is Jim Hellcat.
Yeah, that's it. Jim Hellcat.
One other element of this thing. It does have somewhat of a thirst for premium fuel. Petroleum products.
It
did do a little better than the TRX, which got like 9.5 miles per gallon. This one got a whole 11 miles per gallon.
Oh, it got into double digits. Oh, though.
Did get that's into double a, digits.
That's something.
It's a big car.
It's EPA rated at 12 city, 17 highway, 13 combined. And I managed about 11.
And I know that's terrible, but at the same time, you're not buying this.
No.
If you give two hoots about fuel economy, this is not even remotely on your list. If that's in your top 10, this isn't on your list. Yeah. And,
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, since they're building so few of them, it's not going to have any real impact anyway. You know, I would guess a fair number of them are probably going to end up as garage queens. And then, the rest will. Yeah, we'll be pulled out on Saturday morning to go to Cars and Coffee or something like that.
About it.
Or Friday night at the drag strip.
You could be right.
It's this century's GMC Typhoon.
Yeah. I don't know if you ever had a chance to drive a Typhoon or a Cyclone.
We tried to get my friend's dad to buy one. He was looking for it, and we were really pushing, like, you got to get your dad to buy the Typhoon. He's a big car guy, and we were so close, and he got the Jimmy instead.
My first job out of college, I was working at the GM Proving Grounds. I was working for what was then Delco Moraine on ABS systems, and this was in 1990, 91, when the Cyclone was just announced. And they brought one over to our garage and had a chance to take it out on the track and play around with it a little bit. And it was wicked fast in a straight line, but that was literally all it could do.
Stopping, you turn the wheel, everything goes crazy. You stop, everything goes crazy.
Cornering, no. But going from zero to whatever speed it could get to in very few seconds, it was great at that.
So it basically had one job, and it did it well. All the other jobs, not so much.
That's right. You have one job. You're going to do it well. You're going to be good at it. And it was good at that one job. The rest of it, yeah. And so, it's funny because that was, the Cyclone and the Typhoon were based on the first generation S10, S15 platform. Mm-hmm. And actually, all through college, I drove an 84 GMC S15. So I had basically that truck, but with a puny little Isuzu 1.9 liter four cylinder and a 4-speed manual. So it was funny going into this thing. But anyway, this, the Durango handles much better, rides much better, has actual brakes with, big ass.
What a novel idea.
Brembo calipers on there. So it can stop, it can turn, so it does all that stuff that you expect of a performance vehicle, and hauls, six or seven people. So it's good. It's worth it. Go for it. Buy one.
Go buy one. It's only $90,000.
Only 90 grand.
It's 80 something. By the time you get out, it's going to be 90.
You could get two of those or a McLaren.
You get two of those or one McLaren. There you go.
Well, you, like I said, you buy one TRX and one Durango Hellcat. And then you've got 1400 horsepower. And, you know, if you need to, you know, go to Lowe's and get some bags of cement, you know, you can throw those in the TRX. Of course, you got to lift them up, you know, into the bed.
It's a little workout to get them into the TRX.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you got to take the kids, you know, on a road trip to visit grandma, you know, then, you know, you take the Durango.
Your life is perfect. Done.
Yes, exactly.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Time for some news. So let's start off the quick one. The United Kingdom is about to legalize conditionally automated vehicles. There, a lot of the headlines, various headlines out there, you know, they're talking about legalizing autonomous cars or self-driving cars. And it's a little bit of an exaggeration. It's not quite that. Back just about a year ago now, a little less than a year ago, the UNECE, which is a UN body that works, there's 60 member countries that are part of this. One of the things they do is harmonize regulations across different countries. And part of that is harmonized automotive regulations, automotive safety regulations. So they passed a regulation for what we call level 3 conditionally automated cars. So these are cars that you can take your eyes off the road and hands off the wheel under certain conditions, but then you also have to be prepared to retake control within about 10 seconds if the vehicle tells you to. And the regulation states that you can only do this on divided highways, geofenced, you know, divided highways at speeds up to 60 kilometers or 37 miles an hour. And there has to be a driver monitor system and all that. And so countries are gradually, you know, UNECE member countries are gradually deploying those regulations. They're taking the global regulation and adapting their own, whatever their current regulations are, to fit that. And so that's what the UK is doing. You know, it's basically a traffic jam pilot system. You know, if you're stuck in traffic on the highway, stop and go traffic, you can turn that on and you can sit back and relax and do your email or text or something. You know, just can't climb in the back seat and take a nap. What do you think? You got any interest in something like that?
It sounds like a great idea, but I think it's not really cool until it can do it at speeds more than 37 miles an hour. Like it's just like you said, it's just a traffic jam aid at the moment. You know, it's not something that's really going to let until I can, I don't know, sit in the back seat and read a book or take a nap. It won't really feel like I'm in a self-driving car. It'll just feel like I'm in something that helps me drive and make sure I don't hit that rogue cat that ran in the road or whatever. And, you know, helps, but doesn't really drive for me. Unless it can drive for me all the time, I'm still going to be paying 100% attention because I'm not going to know that moment when it's going to need me. So it doesn't really feel like a self-driving car.
Well, I'm glad you'll be paying attention because there's a bunch of drivers that aren't. Like the guy that was just arrested in the Bay Area for riding in the back seat of his Tesla.
You see, I can't do that because even like you just know, like, oh, it needs you. It's like, great, it needs me. Let me climb from the back seat. No, I need it to not need me or the road has my full 100% attention. For me, there's no halfway. Either I am driving or you don't need me to drive anymore. There's not this, well, I might in a minute. No. You either need me or you don't.
Well, that's sort of the debate that a lot of automakers were having for a while was whether or not they wanted to go to level 3 or just skip level 3 and go directly to level 4 or level 5. Because level 3 requires you not to be totally paying attention, but to have to take over. And so you end up with, we already have complacency with level 2 and level like 2 plus or whatever you want to call autopilot and Super Cruise. Where, and especially with autopilot, because there's no in-car monitoring of the person mm-hmm. other than holding the steering wheel and, you know, adding a little bit of torque to the steering wheel. So we already have issues with complacency on that. If you have this level 3 system, I feel like people, you just can't trust people without You have to have some sort
of... I think you can stop right there. You just can't trust people.
Period.
That's all you need to say.
Yeah, and I think level three is, I enjoy, like BMW has something similar to this. Well, you still have to pay attention, but you can take your hands off the wheel, like Super Cruise, yeah, up to, I think it's probably 37 or 40 miles an hour.
37, yeah.
Yeah, so you can, you're in traffic. I get stuck in Bay Area traffic a lot when I have to go into the city. If I could, I guess, check Twitter, which I, while I was doing that, I guess that would be better, as opposed to watching the road. But I'm always going to be watching the road, just because that's, I've been in enough Teslas. I've been, where they just did crazy things in autopilot mode. I have no idea how this person got in the back of their car. They got arrested, but they're sure, whatever.
He claims to have done like 40,000 miles that way, driving back and forth from.
He claims probably a lot of things. That's what happens when you're an idiot.
Yeah.
he wants headlines.
So I look at it like, when you're saying you have to take over, even like you're checking, say you're checking Twitter or whatever, and the car is now like, go ahead, check your Twitter. I'm fine. I got this. The minute it doesn't, it's that like, if you're immersed in what you're doing, holding your phone, reading your book, in whatever not paying attention thing that you're not paying attention to, suddenly have the car demand your attention. There is that brief moment where you're sort of doing that. Wait, what do I need to look at? Is it from the front? Is it from the back? What's happening? Yeah. So if there's that sort of emergency reaction type thing that you're required to do, you're giving up a couple of precious seconds where your mind is like, where is the danger? And you don't know where you're looking. So I feel like I need to be looking because I'm going to look out my driver's side window and know it's coming from the right. And now I have not done the right thing and a truck has hit me or whatever. I feel like I need to be paying attention to driving until it can say, like, I will get you out of the way of that Mack truck barreling towards you.
Yeah.
I want to be focused on what the road is doing and what the car is doing. I wouldn't be able to relax and read the book. I'd still be like with one eye watching what was going on.
You're always looking left and right, left and right.
Yeah, I like look really shifty now. Like I'm really nervous because I can't really focus. I'm like, wait, is the car okay?
Oh, yeah. Driver, it all comes driver monitoring with cameras. Make sure your eyes are on the road. And I still feel like we should probably just skip level three.
I agree. Like, but unfortunately, automakers are going to do it anyway. They're doing it. So.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to deal with it.
Audi tried to do it a couple of years ago, and then they were like, "Oh wait, no one will let this
do it." Yeah, they put the hardware in, but they never actually enabled the software to do it because it wasn't legal. But Mercedes is doing it this year on the S Class, and there's a few others. GM is going to launch Ultra Cruise probably in 2023, which is likely to be an L3 system. And there's a bunch of others. Yeah. A BMW is doing it on the iX. They're going to have a level three system on there. So we'll see. Have either of you ever driven the Caterham 7 or a Lotus 7 for that matter?
I have not. And it makes me sad that I have not.
I also have not. Also makes me sad, Roberto, that we have not driven that. No,
I have not driven one either, but I would love to drive one. I've seen lots of them at car shows and Cars and Coffee and stuff like that, but I've never had the opportunity to drive a 7. And for those not familiar with the 7, this was a car that was originally designed in the early 1960s, might have actually been in the late 50s, by Colin Chapman as the Lotus 7. And Lotus built them for a long time up until the early 70s, at which point they decided to stop. And they sold all the tooling to another British company called Caterham, who has continued to build them ever since. This is, basically like a 1950s, late 50s, early 60s era, race car. It's a very tiny little roadster, front engine roadster, really ridiculously light.
It's beautiful. It looks so cool.
It is a cool car. And over the years, they've put many different engines in there. Because it's so light, you actually don't need a ridiculously powerful engine to make these things really, really fast. When Lotus built them, they actually sold them as kits. So you could buy a 7 kit and assemble it yourself. And Caterham, I think, still sells them as kits, or you can buy it fully built. Caterham is now working on developing an electric powertrain for this thing. But I'll be really curious to see how they manage to electrify this thing and keep the character of a seven, because, you know, I think they only weigh about less than 1500 pounds. Putting any number of, you know, any decent sized battery in there for a decent sized range. Although really, given the nature of the seven, it's probably not a car you want to take on long road trips anyway.
Right. So you're not going to need this. You're not going to need this, you know, 350, 400 mile range. No one's doing that. So you could have a smaller battery and a smaller range, and it probably wouldn't make any people upset.
Put a 25, 30 kilowatt hour battery in there, give you 100 miles. And that's probably going to be more than
sufficient. That's all you're going to want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is actually one of my dreams. I just want a 100 mile convertible. That's it.
Yeah.
I just want to drive around town, maybe cruise into the city every once in a while, drive around the roads up here. That's it. 100 miles range, convertible, something just to tool around.
I mean, that's basically what I do with my Miata.
That's all I want to do.
I take it out, you know, drive around for a couple hours, you know, come back, go nowhere in particular, just to drive, you know.
Just drive in the drive.
Yep.
Pick up a quart of milk or something. I don't know.
I do that sometimes. You know, take it over to Fresh Time to grab some milk if I run out of milk in the morning.
Because that's all that'll fit in the Miata is a thing of milk. That's it. That's all you got room for. It's milk or eggs, not both.
No, I can put both milk and eggs in there at the same time.
Yeah, you can put milk and eggs and a 12-pack.
But only one of the little half six things of eggs. You can't get a full dozen. <Just kidding. laughs>
Sticking with the electric theme now, the big news of the week. The Ford F-150 Lightning. So this is coming out mid 2022, roughly about a year, a little more than a year, just over a year from now. This is the electric F-150 that Ford has been promising for a while now. They actually released a video of a prototype, I guess about a year ago, showing it towing a 1 million pound train. About 100 feet or so. Yesterday, as we record this, I went out to Ford's Romeo Proving Grounds here in Michigan and had a chance to actually ride in this thing and check it out and learn all about it. And I was a little concerned, earlier when Ford announced the E-Transit, and they announced that it was only going to have a range of 127 miles. And this is the electric version of the big transit cargo van. And, you know, at the time Ford said, you know, that they talked to, you know, transit owners, transit operators, you know, to ask them, you know, what do they need, you know, and figure out, you know, and looking at the telemetry data from the vehicles, you know, figure out how they use them, how much battery do they need to have in this thing, you know, to make it useful to them. And, you know, it turns out, you know, I mean, most people who buy transits are, you know, fleet operators, you know, delivery companies and stuff like that. You know, they're usually operating within a limited geographic area. They're not driving long distances. And 127 miles turned out to be sufficient because it turns out that most transits drive about 75 miles a day. And I was a little concerned that they were going to do something similar with the F-150, you know, basically just do kind of a simple conversion of F-150, you know, pull out the EcoBoost engine and, you know, shove in a battery and a motor. You know, make it kind of a compliance thing, you know, mostly for like landscapers and things like that. Mm-hmm. Turns out they actually did a whole lot more. I mean, this is almost an entirely new truck that looks like an F-150, has some different styling on it. The bodywork is the exterior skin is all unique to make it a little more aerodynamic, a little smoother, and different lighting and everything. But the entire frame is also unique. It's a completely new frame that's different from the gas and diesel F-150s. Has the same mounting points for the cab and the bed, because the cab and the bed structure is the same. But, you know, I mean, this is a real F-150. You know, it's got everything that you expect in an F-150. Comes standard with dual motor, four-wheel drive, 563 horsepower, 775 foot-pounds of torque on every single one. There's no rear-wheel drive version. There's two different battery sizes, 230-mile range and 300-mile range. And they'll have four trim levels from the base work truck, the XLT, the Platinum, and the Limited. And it's going to start at $40,000 for the work truck. And, you know, it only comes as a crew cab. And, you know, so the work truck is going to be basically equivalent to the standard XL. And if you price out a gas engined XL crew cab with four wheel drive, that's $42,500. So this thing is actually cheaper than an equivalent gas F-150, has about twice as much power and three times as much torque, and almost twice the towing capacity of the 3.3 liter V6 in the XL for less money. And if you still have tax incentives available when it comes out, it'll be even cheaper than that. You'll be able to get it for like $32,000. And they did a lot of really cool things with this thing. Like if you get the extended range battery, it's got two onboard AC chargers, and it comes with an 80 amp wall box for charging this thing. So you get that for free. You just have to get it installed in your garage. Cool. What else? It has the Pro Power on board system that you have on the other 2021 F-150s. So the base setup is 2.4 kilowatt output with, I think, six AC 120 volt outlets, and including two in the frunk. And front trunk. And there's an optional 9.6 kilowatt version that comes with 11 outlets. So you get outlets in the frunk, two in the cab, six more 120 volt outlets in the bed, and a 240 volt outlet. And so while we were there, they had a whole bunch of stuff hooked up. They had a cement mixer and an air compressor and a whole bunch of shop lights and a stereo and a miter saw, all running at the same time off of this thing. And it was only drawing about 4 kilowatts. So this thing's got a lot of power available. And on top of that, they also have a feature that they're calling Pro Backup, or Pro Power Backup, I think. I can't remember the exact branding off the top of my head. But basically what it is, if you get that feature, they've got a partnership with Sunrun, which is a company that does solar installations. And you get an inverter that you can install in your garage. And it's got a CCS DC charging outlet you plug in. And you can use that. You can get 9.6 kilowatts out of the truck that feeds back into your house or your business or whatever if your power goes out. So you can basically pretty much power your whole house off of this thing for up to 3 days.
Wow. That would be cool. Okay. So is it
really just Hyundai and Ford now that has vehicle to grid now, or vehicle to infrastructure?
Well, the Hyundai system is actually what they're doing. They have it's more like the Pro Power system, where it's basically just a power takeoff where they've got an outlet that you can power stuff off of. So it won't actually power your home.
Oh, it doesn't go back into the charging system. Okay.
Nissan on the Leaf. The Leaf actually has support for their vehicle to home setup. Mm-hmm. But it's through the CHAdeMO outlet. And there are products in Japan that you can get, you know, that basically a box that you can hook up to your house and plug in. And the inverter that Ford is offering through Sunrun is a smart inverter that it'll automatically switch. So as soon as your power goes out, it'll automatically switch to drawing power from the truck. The Nissan system does the same thing, but nobody's ever offered a box for it in the U.S. market.
Yeah.
That's actually really cool that you can power your house. Cause I just think about all the people who have generators here for when we have power outages, which we frequently get during the winter when the, you know, snow is heavy enough to take down lines, and you rarely need it for more than a short time. You know, the power is not generally out for 3 days straight. It has happened, but that's really unusual. Normally it's like, oh, you got 2 or 3 hours, you got 5 or 6 hours, you don't have power. It would be really nice to just think, well, we can leave the truck plugged in. Yeah. And that'll keep the house toasty, and it'll keep the food from going bad in the fridge. And that would be, that's hugely appealing to someone who has had to deal with no power for a few hours at a time in the winter.
Yeah. In Northern California, especially because of the PG&E will turn off power for days at a time during the summer and in fall because we have, because they don't want to start a fire like they do every year. So you'll be off the grid for a few days sometimes. You know, people, you'll hear from, you know, friends who are 48, 76 hours. We are right next to a switch to a station, to like one of the substations. So we are one block from having our power shut off. So we've never had our power shut off.
Wow.
Which is good for me because I work from home. But yeah, it's
yeah. And for situations, you know, where you've got rolling blackouts where they might shut it off for, you know, a few hours of, you know, in one location and then shift to another location for a few hours and so on. You know, that ability to automatically switch back and forth so that, you know, as soon as when the power goes out, it'll start taking power from the car. And then when it comes back on, it'll automatically switch and start recharging the truck again. And what, you know, they've got, there's a thing in the menus in the truck that you can set a minimum to allow it to go down to so that,
it will run your truck dry.
Yeah.
Like, leave
me at least, you know, 50 or 75 miles of range or whatever amount of range you want.
So it's not like it could clean you out and then suddenly you go to get in the truck. It's like, I have no battery.
Oh, yeah. No. That would be bad, especially if a fire happens to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of neat features like that. The front trunk, you know, because, I mean, you know, this thing is shaped like an F-150. You know, there's a big space in there. You know, it's actually 14.1 cubic feet for the front trunk. When they opened it up, they had two golf bags in there. But, I mean, you know, this is the size of a good sized trunk, you know, on a regular car. That's in the front.
The funny thing, like normally you see the frunks and they're these tiny little things. They're like an add-on thing. It's like, oh, you can't even stick a carry-on in them. Like they're very, very tiny. It's like, no, this thing is huge. You have a huge space. Like you said, bigger than some of the trunks you'll find on a typical sedan. So it's like that's a significant amount of additional cargo that you can lock down and, you know, keep inside and keep safe. That's kind of neat.
And they've got hooks in there and cargo nets, you know, so you can put your groceries in there and keep them restrained so they're not sliding around. And there's a little tray in the front part of it. There's a cover. You can lift it off and stick it in there as a partition. And then there's a drain just like there is in the Mach-E front trunk. So you can use it. You can fill it with ice or, you know, if you, you put your wet gear, fill it with shrimp, have your tailgate parties in there. Although, you know, because it's electric, what you can also do is you can just, you know, stick a mini fridge in the bed and just plug it in.
As filling your frunk with ice. Come on.
Well, you can fill the frunk with ice for the shrimp, but you can stick the beers in the fridge.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. All right.
The shrimp and the ice.
Okay, or so you can use the ice for a blender and you can have mixed drinks.
Look at all these interesting things we thought to do.
And you have more than enough power to drive the blender. So
you have enough power to drive the blender. You have the ice. You have all the space. You get everything.
So clearly they missed the mark, Sam, when they had like miter saws and all this practical stuff hooked up. What they should have had was like a blender, some margaritas, and like, oh, now I get it.
I had the F-150 with the power. I forget what it's called, power thing. And we hooked up a television, a Nintendo Switch, and a toaster oven. And we made little pizza bagels while playing a Mario Kart out in the middle of a field.
That's awesome.
Outstanding.
Did they tell you what architecture it's built? Is it 400, 800 volts?
It's a 400 volt system. Okay. So charging is 150 kilowatt charging. So it'll fully charge on 150 kilowatts in about an hour. And they're not saying right now what the battery is, but from what they said, you know, we figured out that it's probably roughly about 150 kilowatt hour battery for the extended range and probably somewhere around 110 or so for the standard range version. The suspension, it's coil spring suspension all around, independent suspension on the rear. You got a motor at each end, semi trailing arm rear suspension, which I thought was unusual. It wasn't what I was expecting there. You don't find too many of those anymore. What else? Let's see. It's got the optional, the 15.5-inch touchscreen that's in the Mach-E. You get the same one with the big volume knob on there is available in the Lightning and, Sync 4A and all that good stuff. They talked about charging, and range estimation, And they're enhancing the range estimation system in there, because, you know, one of the big challenges is with knowing how much real range you actually have left. And a couple of weeks ago, Ford announced a new feature that's available on the regular F-150s now, this smart scale system, where they put some sensors under the bed, like between the bed and the frame rail, that you can use when you're loading up the truck. You know, you actually know how much weight you're putting in there, so you don't overload it, which is a really cool feature. You know, so if you know the truck's got a 2,000-pound payload, you only put 2,000 pounds of cement in there, or whatever you're loading up. And there's also a smart trailer hitch as well, so you know that the trailer tongue weight isn't too high. Well, what they're doing, they're going to have those same features on the Lightning, but they're taking the information from that and incorporating that into the range estimation. So, you know, if you're driving around with the truck empty, you know, you don't have that load in there, you're going to be able to go farther. You start loading the thing up, and then, you know, it'll know how much load you've put in there, and it will adjust the range estimation. And it also adjusts the range estimation based on individual driver profiles. So in Sync 4, you know, you can have driver profiles tied to each key fob or to your phone if you're using the phone as a key system. So when you get in, you know, based on the fob you're holding, it'll load up your profile, or you can select it manually if you want. And then it keeps track of the way that each individual driver drives. You know, so if somebody's a lead foot and somebody else is more efficient, it will, depending on which driver profile is loaded up, it will customize the range estimation based on who's driving it.
Oh, that's nice.
That's cool.
One other thing, you know, because this thing can tow 10,000 pounds, one of the problems, back a few years ago when Tesla introduced the Model X, and they said you can tow with this thing, Dan Edmonds, who used to be at Edmonds.com, no relation to the family that owned the site, he did a bunch of range tests, or it did a bunch of trailer towing tests with a Model X, towing a trailer around. You know, he went to Arizona and a few other places. And one of the challenges that he always found, if you've ever gone to an EV charging station, they're almost all set up now, you know, as with pull in bays, you know, because you're usually sitting there for, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, however long. And they're not designed like gas stations, you know, where you're designed to drive through. But if you're towing a trailer, that's a real problem. Yeah. And so Ford is working with, working with some of their charging network partners like Electrify America to add drive-through charging bays at some of their stations. So EA is actually doing first ones this year. There's a station, I think, like in Baker, California, somewhere between LA and Las Vegas. They're putting in a drive-through charging bay there for people towing a trailer, and they're doing a couple of other locations as well to start with, and then they'll expand it from there. So, you know, if you're towing a trailer, you don't have to unhook your trailer and then pull into the bay to charge. So it'll be a lot more convenient.
Cool.
That's something you wouldn't think of as a rule, but yeah, it's good that they thought of it, because once you have that truck that actually has some capability and utility, you do not want to have to back up every time you charge it.
No, definitely not. Yeah,
Tesla says they said, who knows what they're doing now, but they said that after the Cybertruck, because they were like, oh, you can tow things. They're like, how? Because you have to back every Tesla up until its spot. Like, what do I do with my trailer? Do I unhook my trailer, leave it down the street, and then pull in? And they're like, oh, we're going to have drive-through superchargers. And you know how quickly Tesla is able to just drop a supercharger somewhere is impressive. So I feel like they're going to, but I mean, Cybertruck, I feel like.
I say they still need the truck.
They still need more than the one truck that Elon drives around.
Yeah. The Cybertruck's probably
once
not.
They have two, you know.
Yeah. That's probably not going to be out until at least middle of next year anyway, and maybe longer than that.
You think it'll be out by the middle of next year?
I really do? At least.
Okay. Look at him. He's like, hold longer. Up, Nicole.
Yeah.
Hold
on. We did have a couple of Twitter questions about the F-150 Lightning. Tom Goble asked, how far, how fast? So, how far 230 or 300 miles for the standard and extended range batteries. So similar to Mach-E, but with bigger batteries because this thing's heavier. How much? Starting price, $40,000. A fully loaded, limited with all the available options, they said will be somewhere around probably close to 90, which is not that much more than what you would pay for, a gas or diesel F-150 limited. And how fast? Well, with two motors and 563 horsepower, at the moment, at least until the Raptor R shows up, this is actually the most powerful F-150 ever. During the demo I got, it did 0 to 60 in about 4 seconds. So it's pretty quick. Can it get a step side bed? No.
Good.
No, nobody offers.
No one should have a step side bed.
Yeah.
I hate step side beds, and I know a lot of people hate me for hating step side beds, but I don't understand them. I don't know why they exist because you're removing space. No, they don't. Then they're removing space from the bed. A truck is a utility vehicle, and we're like, well, I'm removing space. Why? Well, you see those two little steps right there. I'm like, whoa, okay then.
It sort of kind of looks like a 1950s pickup truck.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
Let's see, price, range, charge time, charging time. So this was one of the interesting things they mentioned, because the battery is bigger, obviously the bigger your battery is, the longer it takes to charge. The standard range version, the 230 mile range version, it has a single AC onboard AC charger for charging the battery. And they said their goal was, that you should be able to fully charge the thing in under 8 hours overnight. And so for the long range version, in order to meet that, they had to add a second charger on there. And that's why they also give you the 80 amp, which is a 19.2 kilowatt wall box to charge it with. And that will charge it in under 8 hours at home with that wall box. And then up from a 150 kilowatt DC fast charger, you can do it in about an hour for a full charge. Let's see, what else was there? Pro Power on board. Yep, it does have that, as I mentioned, and it's 9.6 kilowatts available from 11 outlets. You can, and with the 240 volt outlet on there, you can even hook up your MIG welder, to weld stuff up. They deliberately kept the box size the same, the box dimensions the same as any other F-150, because they expect a lot of the customers for this thing are going to be commercial customers that, are going to want to take advantage of the reduced operating costs of this thing. And so, a lot of those customers have various upfit gear that they put in their trucks, whether it's a landscaper, tool racks or, contractors, whatever. And, they often, when they buy new trucks, when they retire a truck and get a new truck, they'll take that gear and take it off the old truck and put it on the new one. And they can do the same thing with this one. They can just take the stuff off their old truck, put it on here. No problem at all.
Leave the generator at home. They just left space for their mini fridge.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all the questions I think we've got for right now. Anything else you guys want to know about the Lightning? Pre-orders start on the 19th when it's unveiled. $100 for a pre-order.
How many pre-orders do you think they're going to get right off the bat? What did that Cybertruck had, like 250,000 in 2.5 seconds? Do you think they're going to get a ton of them?
I think they'll get a lot. I don't know that they'll get that many. I don't think they'll get that many.
No.
But one thing that I did ask about, they've been building a separate facility next to the Rouge plant in Dearborn where they build F-150s. Their electric manufacturing center, I think it's called. And for that one, I was assuming that what they were going to do there was just do the sub-assembly of the skateboard for this thing and then ship that inside and made it up with the body on the main line. But in fact, that's actually a complete separate assembly line that they're using for that. And they're going to build there is the Lightning. That's wow. You know, so it's got a completely separate factory just for the Lightning.
Well, when the Ford F-150 like prints money like it does for Ford, you can sort of let's just make another factory.
A whole other factory, more money.
Fine, yep. It's fine.
No, I think this thing's going to do really well, you know, because it does all of the things that you expect an F-150 to do. And, you know, and it does other stuff too, like, you know, like the power capabilities and, you know, it's, I think that there's a lot, I mean, there's going to be customers, those that tow a lot, you know, all the time will probably not want to get this one right now, at least not this first generation one. You'll probably still want to go with the diesel because, you know, you can go farther with it. You know, you're not going to have the challenges of charging it when you've got a trailer hooked up. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, Ford's going to continue to offer those for a while. But I think for a lot of customers, you know, this is going to be a great option. You know, I mean, I know living here in Michigan, you know, on Friday afternoons, if you hit I-75 heading north from Metro Detroit on a Friday afternoon, you will just see a train of pickup trucks heading north, you know, into northern Michigan. You know, in the summertime, they're hauling jet skis. In the wintertime, they're hauling snowmobiles. And, you know, Sunday afternoons, same thing, heading back the other way, heading back towards the Metro Detroit southbound. And there are three Electrify America stations along the way in northern Michigan, in Gaylord and Bay City, and I forget where the other one, Cadillac, I think. Going basically along the routes that people take in Michigan to go, you know, to go up north on the weekends, you'll be able to stop and charge these things up. And I would be shocked if Electrify America doesn't install, drive-through chargers at most of those, at all three of those stations by the time the F-150 comes out.
Well, we have the same thing. We have if you're going to the White Mountains Lakes region in New Hampshire, which is people from New Hampshire and Massachusetts and even a little further south, there is a spot to do charging that's like where everyone goes before it splits, depending on the direction you're heading, is Tesla superchargers and, you know, just generic EV chargers. I can imagine doing the same thing because it's a similar situation. All you see are people with boats and campers and all sorts of stuff hooked up to the back. And that would be the ideal place for them to just be able to drive in and out rather than the whole backing up thing.
Well, I think that's it for this week. Anything else you guys want to add?
I got nothing.
Sorry, all right. I slept in last week.
Yeah, whatever, Roberto. We were awake. I just want to let you know we got some coffee. We were ready to go. No, Roberto, that's okay. We're fine.
I am on the Pacific side of the country, though.
Yes.
Right. It's still early for you now. Yeah.
Now it's late. Now I'm paying the price because of me. We're recording later. So I'm like, oh, gosh, it's getting late. I'm tired.
And you got to leave the house at 2 in the morning.
I had to leave the house at 2 in the morning to get a flight. No problem. 2 hours of sleep. I'm good. It's cool.
The sun's still out where I live. I can still see the sun. Look at that. Sunshine and happiness.
Oh, be quiet.
It only went down here about an hour and a half ago. So. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.